Welcome to episode 3 of the Live Beyond podcast. This episode is a chat with my friend Sora Walsh, who is a speedy runner and has some pretty amazing achievements to her name. So we chat about how she pushes her own personal limits. So for example, this year she broke the 3-hour mark in a marathon, phenomenal achievement. But she's also come second in an ultra marathon this year. She came first last year. She's run an ultra distance relay. She's done some pretty impressive things. But I think one of the special things about Sorrel is that, yes, she wants to push her own boundaries and own limits, but she also wants to take other people on that journey so that they can achieve things that they never thought possible. So, for example, this year she started a community, a women's community called Women Run 100, which was to encourage female participation in endurance sports. And we'll chat all about that. And you'll see that that's a really interesting journey, and I think there's so much more to come from Sorrel. I'm just so excited. But I don't want to give too much away, so I'll stop there. I really hope you enjoy, and here we go. Hi, Sorrel.
Hello.
Thanks very much for being on the podcast. So I'm going to start by embarrassing you. It's not really your style, but I just think it's been a really amazing year. And I just wanted to run through a few of the wonderful achievements. So Sorrel started in January with, I think, correct me if I'm wrong in any of this, by the way, with a 45-miler called Country to Capital. Then I think Berlin Half.
Yes.
In April.
Yep.
Followed by the London Marathon. And then the Richmond Marathon, where she plays First Lady. Pretty amazing. And then in July, ran 62 miles or 100k only in the Race to the Stones and placed second women. So again, phenomenal achievement. And that isn't all. She then went and clocked a sub 3-hour marathon in Berlin. So it's been a pretty amazing year. And then, not only that, so there's obviously the amazing running achievements, but she's also started a women's sort of running community called Women Run 100, which we'll get onto, about promoting women's participation in endurance sports, and is also the co-founder of a running crew in Manchester. So just a few accolades there. I suppose, given it's been such an amazing year, has it all sunk in yet?
Firstly, thank you. I wasn't expecting that list. I think, yeah, but I think, like, there's always more work to be done, whether that's personal or as a whole for people in general. So, like, I've sort of taken stock of what's happened, and, like, I'm mainly mostly appreciative of the support I've had, because I wouldn't have done really any of those things without people's support. But, yeah, it has sunk in. I just think I'm already, like, wanting to do the next sort of challenge, or, like, you know, the next project now. So got to sort of roll with the momentum, I guess.
Yeah, it's all about, I guess, it's, you get into this kind of all about the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really good. So I met Sorrel again a couple of years ago at Rundem Crew, the group that we run with in London. And I have to say that kind of when I arrived, Sorrel was like the fast girl running with the elites, which was basically just was men. The elites is the fastest. We all run in pace groups, and the elites is the fast. The fast lot. And Sora was always there, and I was like, wow, you know, it's really great. There's a girl in the group, that's brilliant. And over time, there have been more girls that kind of joined, which is at that level, which is fantastic. And then got chatting to Sora, and she's just really, really lovely. And although she's kind of pushing her own limits, she's all about, I think, taking people on the journey as well, and helping others gain confidence to do things that probably they didn't think they could do, I suppose, which we'll come back to, and I think particularly around the community that you've set up. But I think probably, I suppose given the times that you run and everything, it's kind of easy to think that you've probably just always been running since you came out of the womb. That's kind of been it. But I don't think that's been the case.
No, not at all. Like, I've always been, I loved sport in school, and I just always really enjoyed it. But it was only like 4 or 5 years ago that I started, because one of my elder brothers was doing London Marathon, Eden, and I was like, okay, this is really weird. Why is he going on like 20-mile runs? And then I sort of took inspiration from that and started. And then just sort of went from there. But I guess it wasn't really, like, I ran my first marathon and that was an amazing thing for my own confidence and everything like that. But I guess it wasn't really until I joined Run Dem Crew when I sort of realised I could do so much more, run faster and further and like get pushed and sort of roll with that. So yeah, I guess like in the past 2.5 years, it's been an incredible sort of change for me and my own self because of that.
So before Run Dem, which marathon was it, your first marathon?
London Marathon, yeah. Okay.
And were you just training on your own most of the time before?
Yeah, and never used to run with people, ever. Okay. And like my mum always used to be like, why don't you join a running club? And I'd be like, no, it's a very individual thing. And like, I don't want to do that. Because I always felt like it would be really, really competitive and I'd just be bad at it sort of thing. And then after London Marathon, I was looking at like, I don't know, I was just sort of looking at what happened, like, support-wise and, like, you know, different stories on the day. And then I came across Mile 21 and Run Dem Crew. And I'd sort of heard about the crew before, but never sort of pursued the idea of joining. And then, yeah, sort of looked online, found out the West group was open, went along. And then, yeah, it's, like, from there, really, I guess, just sort of was welcomed into this amazing community and then found my own feet in that, I guess.
So Mile 21 is where everybody that isn't running, if you're not running, you're cheering, is the ethos. So there's usually, I don't know, this year there were probably...
It was like a carnival.
100, 150, I've no idea, but there were quite a few of us. Mm. And there's confetti cannons that go off, and it is a bit like a carnival. And I think, I've never run it, I've only been in the cheering side, but I can imagine that going through it must be something. So we do it for most races, and there's always a group of Run Dem supporters there. And I've experienced it on a much smaller scale, and even that is such an amazing lift. But yeah, just a really nice community. So not long after Run Dem, you started a crew in Manchester, is that right?
Yeah, because even though I was living in London, I met my friend Kieran, who's now one of my really, really good friends. And like, I don't know, I sort of felt like there wasn't that community in Manchester, and I'd sort of thought, like, there's no need for that, in the sense that, like, there are great people there, because Run Dem is so creative as well. I was like, there are creatives in Manchester, and it would be great to have those people, you know, doing something together. So I spoke to Charlie Dark, who runs Run Dem Crew, and said, me and Kieran would like to start our own crew in Manchester, is that okay? And then we got our friend Rich involved too, and Charlie was like, you know, like, do it, it'd be great. And then at first it was like, I had a job which helped me travel back a bit more freely, so I could be there a bit more often. We'd meet on Monday evenings, and at first it was like four of us, yeah, just running around. And now, like, 2 years later, there's such an organic community there, and it's so nice to see, like, just... It just sort of rolls with itself now, and it's really, really nice.
And how's it grown? Is it just really word of mouth, or have you actually actively...
I guess, like, yeah, word of mouth, but also, you know, Instagram, and, like, we have, like, just, like, a Tumblr website, and, like, people, I guess, they just see the... You know, even if people see the guys running on a Monday evening, they're sort of intrigued about it. But it's really nice because I have, like, old college friends now who run with the crew, and, like, my brother runs with them. And, like, it's just really nice. Maybe it's a bit selfish for me, but it's nice to go back and, like, be like, oh, there's people. It's nice to connect people, you know, different walks of life. And, like, yeah, it's just really nice to see. I mean, it would be amazing if I could go back a bit more and run with the crew a bit more, but it's also nice that it doesn't need... Like, Kieran lives in London now, and it doesn't necessarily need us to be there. It just happens now.
Yeah. And is it the same? Presumably, it's the same kind of ethos. It's not about times and winning. It really is about community and kind of supporting each other, I suppose, whatever your goal is.
Yeah.
Whether it be to get from couch to 5K or, you know, to run an ultra marathon.
Yeah.
Sort of whatever.
Completely. It's not about... Like, obviously, if someone wants to run a 3:30 marathon, the crew will support each other, you know, in getting that goal. And I think I saw that mainly when a lot of the guys did Manchester Marathon last year. And it was just really nice. There was like a group of the lads that were doing it would go and run on the Saturdays, and I sort of saw that change of like they were all supporting one another through it. They were all running different times, but it didn't matter, they were all running the same distance. And I think it is very much about that, and that's why it is a very special thing, because it's not elitist in that sense. Like, yeah, there are faster people, there are slower people, but we're all like, they're all on that, you know, out there on a Monday evening doing the same thing. And yeah, it's really nice to see.
So if anyone's in Manchester,
yeah,
check out Stillwaters, and we'll put the contact details and stuff in the notes for the episode. But I think, because I also think with Stillwaters, the creativity comes through, particularly with the anniversary events that you do. So is Alley Cat I think that's really, do you want to just go into it?
So basically, Kieran and Rich, who are the other co-founders, they used to be really into fixed gear cycling a few years back. And Kieran loved the concept of doing a race around that rather than just doing, you know, everyone loves doing halves and 10Ks and stuff, but we felt like it would be nice to have people come and race and explore the city in a different way. So for our first year anniversary, we did the first Alley Cat, and basically we gave people a map on the evening, and then they would have to run to a number of different checkpoints along the city and then come back to the hub. And we sort of incorporated like CrossFit, which is basically like, it's sort of like body weight training and different things like that. So people had to come back, they'd get on a rower for 3 minutes and then they'd go out and run again.
Wow.
I think when they finished, they were like, why have we done this to us? But it was really nice to see, because I ran it the first year with my boyfriend, and like, it was really nice for me to see the city in lights I've never seen before, you know, running on a Saturday night, weaving in and out of drunk people and stuff. And it was like, it was a nice way.
It's
more fun on a Saturday evening than I've had in many a club. Like, it was, you know, it was a really nice way to see the city. And so this year we did a similar concept. We did the Alley Cat, but it was a bit different. But it was just nice to sort of have people come up from London and, like, you know, have different people just combine together and just exploring in a complete different way. It was just something that I was like, I was proud to sort of show the city that I sort of used to go to on a weekend and like spend my time there, and something that, it's one of the reasons is why I am who I am, because I was brought up there. It was really nice to showcase it to people in that sense.
I think it's brilliant, and it's also brilliant the way it's grown as well. But I suppose, just coming back to you, although I went through all of the amazing achievements this year, I think last year was probably quite an important year as well, because you did your first ultra, I think, in January. So the same race as this year, is that right? So country to capital, but in January of last year. And I guess I'm just like, why the progression to ultras, I suppose, from what most people do, like, which is kind of half marathons, marathons, 5Ks, 10Ks.
Well, I guess I have a gentleman called Daniel Maskett to blame for this. Daniel is one of the gentlemen in Rundown Crew and runs with the elites, with myself and the other guys. And he was like, oh, we're going to do a race in January, and we'll do like a training run in like December time. We'll run 30 miles and then the race is 40 odd miles. And I was just like, looks at him like, that sounds horrendous. Why would you ever do that? Because I knew, like, when I did my first marathon, it took so much out of me. Like, I threw up everywhere after I finished, and like, it was such a huge thing for me. And then I couldn't really comprehend going past that. So I was like, you guys are on your own in this one. I'm not joining. But then I think I wasn't in a very good place in the November time of, well, it was like 2 years ago. So I was like, you know, trying to find my feet in my career, interning a lot and just working and not having anything to sort of survive on. And I remember I just came home one night and I was in a really crap place and I was like, I need something to just focus on. And I just signed up for the place and was like, okay, I'm going to run this race and it's going to get me through. So, like, it really helped, though. Like, I had to move back to Manchester for, like, a couple of months, sort of sort myself out and get on my feet again. And it really kept me grounded in that sense. Like, it was really something to focus on. And I remember I went out and did, like, a 31-mile training run, the one that Daniel spoke of, but on my own. I went and visited my granddad in Sunderland and, like, mapped out the route. And I think he was like, what on earth? I don't want to let you do this. But I had, like, my brother Eden and his girlfriend Hannah, like, messaging me all the way through, like, you're doing really well. And, like, I remember coming back and thinking, I didn't think that was ever possible. And I've done that now. And, like, you know, and then it was sort of, there was a group of us going to do the race, and then when we actually did it, there was so much support. Like, everyone came out and cheered, and it was amazing. But then it was just like, God, that literally was impossible in my mind, and then it wasn't. So I think when you do something like that, then you actually have more clarity, and you can actually visualise things that you sort of wouldn't have seen before.
Yeah.
So then I think that was sort of, yeah, that's when that door of craziness opened.
It's funny, isn't it? It's kind of, and then the word impossible doesn't mean the same thing anymore.
No,
any time that somebody says that something's impossible, you think, I'm not sure.
I mean, no, yeah.
A recent example is a guy who recently did 50 Ironmans in 50 days in 50 states.
Oh, wow.
In America.
Consecutive.
What's he called? Ironman Cowboy. Yeah, 50 consecutive days. And I was listening to an interview with him before he did it, and honestly, I don't think much is impossible, but I genuinely was thinking to myself, I don't think that's possible. I just don't think a human body can go through that. And he did it, you know? And I'm not saying, I don't necessarily want to put myself through that personally. Not
me,
but
me either.
But the point is that even that, I was actually convinced that probably was impossible, and it's not. And so, yeah, you're kind of, but I think everything's relative, and so that was his thing, and like my level of impossible will be far less than anything like that. But then just the idea that you think, okay, well, one, is it impossible? And two, other people have done it, so, you know, why not? But what I think's really lovely, because you have a really nice blog, and I think you're quite candid about the way you feel and kind of worries. And I think at one point you say, you know, I'm a worrier and I'll always be a worrier. And then a couple of times you phoned your dad before a race with the, like, what if I die? And I just think it's not funny, actually. You're not dead, so that's
no,
great.
Yeah. Maybe I was speaking from the grave.
But I think that's really nice to share, because you could look at you and what you do and just think, oh, you know, this is really easy and you're not having these kind of doubts, but it's not that simple, probably.
We're all human beings, and I think, like, you know, for me it's really important to be honest and, like, open, because I think if I can help someone relate to that worry and be like, oh, okay, that's normal, and you actually get over that and you rationalise it and digest it a bit, then that's all I sort of want from that. And I think, like, I don't know, when people sort of think that you don't worry about these things, or it's easy, it's like, no, you don't understand. And I think, like, it's really important to help people understand that I'm not a superhuman, and no one is a superhuman. Like, everyone works to get where they are. And I think, like, yeah, you might get people who are a bit more talented, that's great, but, like, really, we're all on the same level, and we can all go and run 45 miles, or we can all go and do the same, maybe not the same as the next person, but we can still try to, you know, aim for that goal.
Yeah, and I think it's about putting the work in, isn't it? Because I think I don't know, I mean, the internet has a lot of really wonderful things, but it also, I think, there's a lot of kind of instant gratification, and we get used to that, probably in a lot of aspects of our lives, actually. And I think there's a tendency to forget that in order to achieve things, you actually really do need to put the work in.
Yeah.
And you really do in terms of the number of hours that you put in and the training schedules and everything. So it doesn't just happen mm-hmm. by chance. You know, I don't think a 3-hour marathon time just happens by chance.
But then people, like, I don't know, I think some people's reaction I was quite shocked by. So I had people be like, oh, so what's the secret? And I was just like, there is no secret. It's called work, you know, and I know people understand that, but I'm also like, that's why I'm saying, like, I'm not special because I got that. I just thought I'm getting that and I worked hard and I understood how I had to get it. Mm. Whereas I think people can't comprehend it, and I couldn't comprehend it at first, but
yeah.
You have to chip away. Like, I think people do think too often of the here and then the now and not the in-between process. And I think that's really important not to do that. Like, you have to think of things progressively. So if you have a goal, I think you have to think, okay, I want this, but maybe in 2 years' time. Like, 1 year might not be achievable. I think it's about being realistic with it, really.
When did you come up with the idea that you wanted to do a marathon in 3 hours? Because your initial, I think... What was your time for your first marathon?
3:35 or 3:36.
Yeah, I mean, that's still pretty speedy. But there's a big difference between that, you know, over half an hour. That's a huge difference in terms of training and everything. So when was the seed?
Planted,
yeah.
Well, the lady called Claudia, and we were on a run one time doing a race called Flatline 10, which... It's 10 miles up and down a very steep hill in London, and it's very difficult.
It's very... I can vouch for that. It's very difficult. It's not the most pleasurable of experiences in my life, but definitely worth it.
Yes, and there is always cake at the end.
True.
So this was, for me, one of my training runs for my second marathon, which was a year after my first. And Claudia was like, so are you training for a sub-3? And I was like, what? And she was like, you're training for a sub-3, aren't you? I was like, no. I was like, I want a 3:25 maybe. And then she was just like, okay, I think you need to sort of rearrange your goals because you're more than capable. I wasn't more than capable at that time in my life, but I think having that conversation really changed my perspective. I remember the next day I did a 20-mile run, and it was at a pace I didn't think I could ever keep up for 20 miles, but because she'd said, you can do this, I was like, actually, yeah, I can. And it's so weird sometimes when you hold back because you're a bit scared of pushing yourself a bit more. But if you push yourself and you don't feel great, all you do is stop. Do you know, you don't... I think, again, you have to be realistic with training, like, yeah, there's a point where you're training and you're giving, you know, 90%, 100%. But you also have to take care of your own body. Mm. So me going out and doing those 20 miles, I was like, oh my God, I never knew I could run at that sort of speed for that long. And then for me, that was like a huge turning point. So then I ran London Marathon that year, did a 3:13, which
wow.
I could, for me as well, I was like... I wouldn't have done that without that conversation and without that push.
Yeah.
So although that, like, it was a year and a half after that I got a sub-3, again, like I said, it's a progressive thing. So I knew I couldn't go for it. There were a few races where I went for a sub-3 and I was not ready, which was London this year. I got to mile 14 and it was horrendous. I've never felt like that. And I'm actually glad that I felt that way, because... Now I know I'll never do that to myself again.
I was actually going to come on to that, because I remember talking about it and also reading your blog about it and just how you dealt with it, because the race didn't really go to plan, as you said.
No,
it
was
awful. I think that's quite... When you've got a dream like that, I think it can be a bit demoralising. Mm. But somehow that didn't happen. Like, you were still convinced that... And it wasn't that long afterwards, you know, April to October. Mm. That's when you cracked it. Yes, I don't know, what was your kind of method of kind of still believing that this was possible?
I think that I reevaluated everything after London. Although I did train, it wasn't like, I don't know, I needed to go back to the drawing board and be like, okay, I have to actually follow a training program, because I'm very much of the nature of like, oh, I don't want to be tied down. I love running. I'll just run when I want. And I do run often, but I enjoy it and I don't ever want that enjoyment to go. And I always felt like if I followed a structured training program, I would hate it. When actually I didn't hate it, it gave me the structure that I needed. And I didn't follow it down to an exact point, but it gave me that guidance. Mm. So as well, I also did research into like the more scientific aspects of it, I guess, you know, learning a bit more about VO2 max and how you can improve that and what track sessions I should be doing and when to do back-to-back days and things like that, I think really helped. So yeah, I just kept my mileage consistent. I did about 50 to 60 miles a week, and then I cycled like 50 to 60 miles. But my cycling's okay. Commuting. So it's not like, it is still movement, but there are so many traffic lights in London that it's not like, you know, the most I get is down the mall, like half a mile of like zooming along, but that's it, you know.
You're one of the sensible cyclists that stops at traffic lights.
Yeah.
I am too. I'm not really into the whole like, take your life.
No, not at all. So yeah, I think as well, like I had to also be patient. Whereas in London, I ran the first half in like 1:28. So I was, which is ridiculous. I would have been going for like so much ahead of the time that I was actually going for. So in Berlin, like before Berlin, my friend Manny spoke to me the night before and said like, you've done the training, like you just need to compose yourself, just think of that word. And also my other friend Andrew was supposed to be running with me and couldn't find him on the morning of the race. He was like, because I'd said I'm like a puppy on race day, like I can't run slow at the beginning, I just can't. And he was like, I'm going to reel you in, like we're going to run on pace, every single mile. So although I couldn't find him, all I kept thinking was, reel yourself in, like don't go above pace.
Yeah.
And that really, really helped. Like, I got to halfway and did it in 1:30. I thought, right, like, now we can actually get going, like, you know, we'll see what happens.
And you felt good.
Yeah, and I think what was really weird, everyone spoke to me after and was like, was it, like, horrendous? Like, how did you feel? I was like, it sounds ridiculous, but it was the most strong I've ever felt in a race. But that's also because I was composed about it. I didn't overreach this time. So, yeah, I got to, like, well, there was a cheer point at like 40 kilometres. And I felt so, I was like, I can't believe this is actually happening. Like I don't think I still believed it until that point. Yeah. I was like, and I'd just passed the balloons of like 3 hours and I just felt like, oh my God, they're gonna get me. And they never did. And I think like, I don't know. Even now, I'm like, it still doesn't feel like it happened because it was something that I thought I'd have to keep going at and going at and going at. But you will get there. I think you will get there at some point. You just have to, it's a learning curve. You have to take every bad experience and be like, okay, what can I learn from that horrendous thing? I think that really helps. So to have, I don't think if I didn't have as bad an experience in London, I don't think I would have actually got
That's really interesting. And it's a really nice way to see it as well, I think. Mm. And a really positive way to see it. Did you put your training schedules together yourself then? Or did you?
I'm going to sound really geeky now. My friend Danielle bought me a book called Advanced Marathoning.
Yeah.
But it is actually a really good book. So it's just programs from there.
Okay.
But I'd really recommend it. I'm not sure what the author's called. But they do programs from 55 miles a week to like 100, obviously.
Okay.
Couldn't do that on a full-time, you know, day job. It was hard enough doing like 60 miles for me. I was like falling asleep most days. I don't know how people do that. Like, I know guys that run 100 miles and work, and I think they're incredible.
But you also have other stuff going on, which we'll come on to. It's not just, there's more to it. But also the 3 hour time had other significance, didn't it, in terms of Boston qualifying?
Yes. So along with running with the guys in Rundam Crew, the elite guys, they've pushed me so much that I would not be the person I am even now from, you know, being pushed and like guided and given confidence. Like, but when they, so there's a race called Boston, it's in America and you have to qualify for it, but the women's qualifying time is a 3:35 marathon, depending on age. So, you know, I got that when I ran my first and it wasn't something I aimed for, but yeah. Obviously it's an amazing thing to give women that thing to, you know, aim for as a goal. Although for guys, it's sub 3:05 is the time. So comparatively, all the guys that I was running with were working their socks off trying to get this time. And like, I just sort of thought like, I am not going to run that race until I get your time. Or a lot of them were running, trying to get sub threes. I was like, I'm going to go for that because I want to show you that we're on the same level. And it's also like a respect thing. Like, I've learnt so much from them, so I only want to do it when I've put the work in that they have to.
Yeah.
So, although I had like friends saying, oh, Sorrel, I know you want your 3:05, but you should really run Boston. It's amazing, like this and that. I think the stubborn gene comes out all the time, but I'm like, no, like I need to prove to myself and them, like, you know, that I can do it. It's never like they said you can't, but I just wanted to say, like, I'm rooting for you guys, like, and I can, yeah. You know, I know what you've been through. So that was the biggest motivation for me, was, you know, also to show women that you can aim higher. Like, you don't have to just aim for what is the average or a goal someone else has given you. Like, I'm not denying for 1 second that the women's Boston time isn't worthy of, you know, women getting there for that time. I think it's amazing, but I also think, okay, you've got that, go on, just aim a bit higher and push yourself a bit higher. Like, you know, we can all do more for ourselves, and I think that people need to see that within themselves a bit more. Like, I get why there are standardized rules and regulations, yeah. Or qualification times, but yeah, I just think there's always the ability to do more.
I think it's really interesting because it's amazing how if somebody, so that time, the women's time, for example, it's almost a blocker, I think, in a sense, because you're like, okay, well, if that's all I need to get, mm-hmm. then that's fine. And maybe that's all I can do because there's a reason that time's there. And so maybe I shouldn't be trying to go any faster. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really interesting. I think also the relationship that you have with the guys at Run Dem Crew and how they have kind of really supported you. But also, you know, I suppose Claudia's conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
Previously, it's kind of, you do it to yourself, but you've also had other people that have planted seeds mm. that have allowed you to kind of think, oh, okay, well, maybe I'm gonna move that. But I think the kind of, yeah, the being a woman and wanting to be kind of on the same level as men in this particular event, I think is really interesting. But it also sort of brings me back to last year, where I think there were probably just a few events that kind of got you thinking in a little bit of a different way in terms of getting other people involved, in particular, particularly women.
Yeah.
I know you're... So there's a group called Vault Women.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to let you talk about it because you'll explain it better than I will, that I know you're really part of. And I think that's kind of taken you on your own kind of... Or maybe not. Maybe you had the ideas beforehand. I don't know, actually.
I can probably say that I didn't, in the sense okay. that... Yeah, obviously, it's great to support people, and I think in Run Dem Crew, you're involved in that, but I think I didn't see what I could do to help people through mm-hmm. my own running. Whereas, so Vault Women is a project that currently stands on Instagram, and it's about relaying the pride to be a woman, and the fact that, well, basically just inspiring other women to be proud of the running that they're doing and their exercise and see the positives in that and how we can all progress, you know, as like one. But also that, like, not to be limited by, you know, femininity. Like, we can have a bit of a, not even a masculine element, but be bold and be brave and do all these things that we're told maybe you're not supposed to do. And it's like, okay, I'm just going to do my own thing now. I don't, you know, need to be validated by all those sort of, not rules and regulations, but I guess, you know, guidelines of being a woman. So it's kind of mixing that up.
Social norms, isn't
yeah.
it, really?
Yeah, and yeah. cultural, yeah. yeah. So I was invited last summer to go and run a race called Hood to Coast, which is a 199-mile relay race. You have two vans, 12 people, and two drivers. So, yeah, it's in Portland in Oregon. And
how many people take part?
I think there's like 1,000. There obviously has to be a limit.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's not 1,000 teams, but there's... maybe, I'm not sure, but because of the road, you would just have carnage every... You know, like, there is a lot of traffic anyway. But, yeah, I would definitely say to anyone, go and do that race, because it is... it just the camaraderie is amazing. But what I had the opportunity of being involved in was... so a global vault women team where there were all different women that had been selected from different areas of the world. So, you know, UK, Germany, Toronto, Copenhagen. And we all met. I've met a couple of the girls before, but we all spent a week together and then we ran the relay. And it was just incredible because it was amazing to witness all the different ways of... the way that people approach situations of, okay, this has happened, suck it up, deal with it, get on the road and run. And like, you know, for me, a lot of this, of course, I love running and I love the movement of it, but I think it's so much more than that. And I think that's what our witness was like. Yeah, we're here, we're women running, but it's what we represent in the sense that we're going, we can go a bit further than that, and we can, like I said, be brave about things and not have to be this little, you know, shrinking violet in the corner. Like, I think it was, yeah, it was just an amazing experience, and that I learned a lot from the women who I met there, particularly my friend Preeti, who is from Toronto. Well, she lives in Toronto in Canada. She runs with a crew called Parkdale Roadrunners, and she started a women's run on the Saturday mornings because she basically went to San Francisco, ran the women's race there, and was like, there are all these women here bossing it. And she didn't feel like that was happening in the crew. Like, she felt like the women there weren't necessarily owning themselves. They didn't have that sort of confidence to. So she went back, started this ladies' run on a Saturday, and just hearing her speak about it was such an inspiring thing. And it was like really emotional listening to how these women have changed. And she was like, they're just confident now. They like own themselves. And like, she's like, they're just completely different women. So I think like taking inspiration from that was really important for me, because I thought like, I want to make a change and I want to try and do what other people have done, because it's such an important thing. And I think it's really important also to, if you have those sort of ideas of change, you should enact upon them. You shouldn't think, oh, someone else will do it, because someone else might not, you know, and you never know what. I think you have to just roll with it and think, if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, but at least I've tried to make a change.
And so then, so soon after that, you ran the 62-miler, 100K. And I don't know, was that the thing that kind of really got you going following the conversation at the Vault Women event?
Yeah. So I ran Race the Stones 100K, which is 100K along one of the oldest paths in Britain. But I actually ran that, so it kind of links up, I ran that as part of a women's team, which I had sort of entered to be in because people were like, Sorrel is an ultra, why don't you go and run it? And I was like, I'm not like an ultra marathon goat. I'm like, I've run one ultra, but I thought, you know, what's there to lose? So I entered, got chosen. I was like, great. So I think there was maybe 10 of us. We conversed online and like met up a few times. But then it was interesting because I got approached by a friend, James Poole, to basically be, he was basically saying, I kind of want you to race this because I think you could win it. And I was like, I've never ran further than 40 odd miles. I think I might not even finish this thing. So it's nice that you think that, but I don't think that's a very realistic thing. But kind of went away again and like thought about it. But I also felt indebted to run with the girls because I thought we were going to run as a team.
Yeah.
So for 2 months I was like...
Which is hard to do it at that distance. Yeah. Any distance actually, but the longer it gets. Yeah.
I don't think I thought about that. So okay. No one was going to run as a team, but I just thought, oh my God, I'm going to be a traitor and I don't want to be and I don't really want to be selfish. And I just didn't know what to do. So for 2 months I went back and forth in my own brain. And then on the night before the race... So also basically James said he would pace me.
Okay.
Because he had a place for the race too.
Yeah.
So I also felt like, I don't want to waste someone's opportunity if I can't even finish the thing. But the evening before the race, I stayed at Kat Simpson, who's one of my good friends now. She's like one of the ladies that organised the group. So I stayed at her house before the race. I was just like, do you mind if we just have a chat? I just need to speak to you.
Oh, she must have been like, what?
I know, I think she was like, what the hell? So I just said I just explained and said, basically I've got this opportunity. I have no idea what will happen tomorrow. I was petrified.
I bet.
And she was like, of course. She was like, why have you even sort of fretted about this?
It's fine.
She was like, we're not going to run in a team anyway. I'm sure that the girls will all split up. And they did, like, a couple of them ran it in pairs, a few of them ran it on their own, you know, so I just felt I didn't want to be sort of self-absorbed and selfish about the thing. I didn't want to be letting anyone down. But yeah, she was like, do it, it's fine. So yeah, just began it with James, and then we ran the whole race together, and he was a huge support for me because I, for one, never even thought that racing something like that would have been an option. And to be honest, I was sort of disgusted at the thought of it at first because I was like, you're going to kill me. Like, I don't want to die.
This is where that thing comes in. What if I die?
Yeah. Well, you're not going to. That's the thing. Like, and I think when you think about it, it's like the only way I can describe something that you've never done before, for me, the feeling of it is like, it's like a black hole of like... Oh. All I could think of is like I couldn't comprehend it. So in order to comprehend it now, I think you've just got to go and see if you can do it.
Yeah.
So to get out of that, you know, method of thinking like that,
because that's where the limits lie.
Yeah.
I guess the limit is as far as you can see.
Yeah.
Most people, and
well, that's your perception,
yeah, exactly.
Though. So if you break it, in order to break your own perception, you have to go a bit further.
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference. So, yeah, we were running it, having a great time. Like, we got to the halfway point and I felt really, really good and we were in good spirits. Then I turned round and I saw the second lady and I was like,
okay,
oh God. And she looked like an ultramarathon runner. Like, she looked like she knew what she was doing.
Yeah, but she probably thought you did.
I definitely didn't.
No?
I didn't. I guess... You only know through experience, you know, but so at that point it was my second one. I didn't necessarily know what I was doing, but you do need to know to a point, but you learn as you're doing it. So I just said, oh, the second lady's there and, you know, we sort of need to get a move on. And it's not like if that lady had have overtaken me, I would have been like, go on, like, you know, amazing, do it. I have no qualms with that whatsoever, but for me at that time, I didn't want to waste this opportunity for him in the sense that I didn't want to let him down and I wanted to sort of see if I could.
Mm.
So then we sort of, that was when the real sort of race began for me, and it was like cat and mouse.
Really?
It was really tough, yeah. There was one point on a hill, and it was a really big hill for me anyway, and I turned around and I could see her, like, it's not chasing me, but coming up this hill at quite a speed, and I just... That was one point where I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And, you know, if she overtakes me, then great, like, amazing, good for her. The better lady wins,
yeah.
And it might not be my day, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Then we got to the top of this hill, and it was a really humid day. It was, like, the weirdest temperature. It was really hot, and then it sort of changed. You could see these looming black clouds. got to the top of this hill and I just said to this guy, Craig, who we were running with, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, this is just awful. And he was like, you can, like, you know, you can do it, and being really sweet. And then before I knew it, the rain just came and it was like torrential. And I think it just gave me like a lease of life. So then from there, I think it was just the change of like, right, temperatures cooled down, whatever, and we just took off. And yeah, that was a huge confidence boost in the
sense. Thank goodness for British weather.
Yes. Awful rain, thank you. Although I'm from Manchester, I should love the rain. I do. But yeah, and then we ended up, yeah, basically ended up coming first, which
amazing.
Is, I think for me to have not thought I could even finish it, to have been given that huge nudge to say, race this with me, I'll be there and I'll support you. It, yeah, I think that for me was a huge turning point in my own sense of capability and what I could do. But something I noticed on the day was there was barely any women doing it.
How old were you when you did it?
24.
Yeah, but that's not the average age of an ultra runner either. So yeah, that's pretty young. In a good way,
yeah.
In an amazing way, to be pushing those boundaries even more. Because I don't know what the average age is, but I think it's in the 30s, late 30s. Because people sort of progress from the shorter distances and go into the longer distances. So yeah, sorry, I interrupted you in terms of the gender.
It's fine. So I think I sort of saw that and was like, okay, it's a bit weird that there aren't that many women, because I'm treated exactly the same as guys and there is no need for there to be a difference if I can do something like that.
Yeah.
And it's the second time I've done that sort of distance. There's no reason why another woman can't. So I think tying that as well with what I'd learned from my experience of meeting all the girls, you know, with the Vault Women team, it sort of got me thinking, really. I just thought I wanted to make a change and see what I could do in the future to help, you know, change the number of women in endurance sports.
Yeah. So, but then you came up with a specific project.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
But when did you come up with it?
So, I had the idea of doing a team in, it's probably December time. January, maybe. I think it was December, maybe. So I had the idea of doing a female team again. And then I thought, do you know what? A team is a selective thing.
Okay.
And that, although that's amazing and I was really thankful to have been part of a team, it doesn't change anything in the sense that it doesn't change numbers and you get selected and it's not an elitist thing, but it doesn't allow everyone to be involved if they want. And that is what I wanted. I wanted Sandra, you know, a 55 years old to be able to do something like that. So basically had a talk with the race organizer and said, I've got this idea for a project, gonna see what happens. And then I spoke at Rundown Crew and just said, hi guys, got an idea to do a women's project. We'll probably do training runs. I didn't really know what it was going to become.
I remember when you announced it and I thought to myself, I really wonder what this is going to, what whether people are going to take it up, because it feels like, so at this race you can do a 50k, can't you?
Yes.
Or you can do 100k, or you can do 100k over 2 days.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know at the time whether I knew of the options, but it was just after I'd got back and I was like, I really wonder how this is going to go. And it was pretty amazing, really, the response. I was really pleasantly surprised by the number of girls that were like, all right, I'm going to take on this challenge.
Honestly, I got up there and thought, okay, five women, if we have take five women to that race, then great. And I remember saying, like, oh, it would be amazing if, like, 50 girls rocked up to the start line and, like, you know, it would just be incredible to do that.
Yeah.
So I spoke in front of everyone and kind of felt like people might have been like, oh, what the hell? I'm not going to do this. Like, I'm sorry. Great. You know, I'll be supportive, whatever. But then I got home and, no, I didn't even get home. After, like, people were running, a lot of girls came up to me like, I think I might be interested in doing it. And I was like, really? Like, genuinely, like, amazing. But then it was also like this strange feeling of, I want these people to be involved, but to what point am I being a bit reckless? Am I, because I'm not a coach, I'm, you know, I'm not a mentor. I'm just someone who wants people to do these things for themselves. So I did have moments of like, oh my God, this person's only done a half marathon. Am I being really stupid? Am I being a bad person? Am I doing the wrong thing for these girls? And then I sort of learnt, like, no. Like, again, what we spoke about before is, like, you have to train for these things. If you train correctly, you'll be fine.
And also people weren't joining knowing that you were a coach. And also people need to take responsibility for their own progression and journey as well. And I completely take on board that you did feel responsible because ultimately it is an initiative.
Yeah.
But that equally, I think everyone has to do what they're capable of. And although, as you said, nothing is impossible, I think, and as you've said, you kind of push yourself too much at times, and people need to be conscious of not their broader limits, but maybe their limits at a specific time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are some scary stories out there. Yeah. And there are very few, but it's usually often because of that kind of going beyond what you can actually do as a live human being at that particular point in time. So I totally take on board what you're saying.
So it was like a weird mix of excitement and really so appreciative that I had a good response, because I got quite a few messages then of like, I've seen this group and I'm really like, I really want to get some more information. So I was like, amazing. And it sort of snowballed from there. So we ended up with 52 women either running 50k or 100k awesome. Over the weekend.
That is amazing. And presumably, I think very few of those would have done it without what you put together. Because I know there was a lot of nudging of people. People who were like, oh, I'm thinking about it, but I'm not really sure. And there was Sorrel there to be like, you can do it. Go.
But it was also very interesting because what I wanted was people to train together, because I think that's where, obviously that's where the work lies, but I don't know, I wanted it to be a safe environment for the girls to feel like they could be a bit vulnerable, because we would all support one another.
Okay.
So it began as like the odd weekend run, and then I did weekly Wednesday runs where the girls would come and run like 10k, you know, really chilled out, just chat, go and have ice cream after in the summer or whatever. And then on a weekend, we'd maybe do like 20 miles. We did one that was like 26 miles just in Richmond Park.
Okay.
And it was interesting on some of those runs where at the first few, some girls would be like, okay, so I've thought about it and, you know, I'm not going to do it this year, but I'm going to do it next year instead. And then at the end, they'd be like, okay, so we've been talking and I think I'm going to run the 100K. And I'm like, I haven't even had to do anything, but you guys have talked and talked each other into it. So I think that was something I really noticed, that, you know, girls especially, which I have found, need that relatability of, okay, you do it, I'll do it, we're in it together. And I think when you're doing something that not a lot of girls are doing, that's key for me, and to have that environment.
I think that's really important as well, because I think we become a bit blasé is probably the wrong word, but we're, through being in this community of people, we're surrounded by people who are constantly doing things. Like when I joined Rundown Crew, for example, which was what, not that long after you, I think, probably close to 2.5 years ago, I didn't want to do a marathon. I was like, I'm just happy to run and maybe do a couple of halves and whatever. And then, it's probably again the wrong expression, but got brainwashed. Not in a negative way, but everyone around you's doing it. Yeah. So you're like, oh, well, it's just normal.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sign up for one and I'm going to do one. And then it progressed from there. Mm. But I think if you don't have that kind of community around you, you know, people who have never done a marathon or half marathon or anything, they're not going to necessarily dissuade you, but they can't relate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's really special about what you did, because you've done it, you know, you're demonstrating what you're actually saying. And I think that gives people a lot of belief.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm not, like I was saying, I'm not any better than anyone else, and I'm not a special person in any way, so it was really important for me to be like, I've done this, I'm a completely normal person, I've got a full-time job, you know, I've got a life, but you can do it. And like, that was a really important thing for me, because we're all in it. For me personally, I feel like we are all in this together in life, and you know, I don't want to compete with people in the sense that I don't want to just keep that to myself. Like, I want to share it with people because it gives you so much confidence, and I think the more people I can share that with, the better. So yeah, that was an amazing thing for me to witness this change in these women and see them. Like, I was in a bit of state after the race because this year it was very hot and yeah, I was very dehydrated, but seeing the girls come across the finish line smiling, it was like, it was a really emotional thing for me because I don't know, just to witness that change was incredible.
And I don't think it's just emotional for you, actually, because earlier I was on the website, the Women Run 100, and I was just sort of going through the different, because it was really lovely what you did. You sort of posted many stories about each individual that was doing the race, on Instagram. And I was just looking at the top of it, and it's all of these women coming across the finish line with these beaming smiles, and even just talking about it, I have goosebumps. It's really very, very powerful. And it makes you wonder, kind of, what more you can do with it. Because I would have thought a lot of people just looking at those photos, if you can get to a point where something does that for you, because there's no words needed, frankly, for the looks on these women's faces. I don't know, just really, really special, phenomenal achievement. So, and did everyone finish that?
We had three of the girls that had to pull out because of injury. But there was no one that didn't finish because of, I can't do this. And I think that was a really special thing of, it was such a shame that those girls did get injured, but I know they'll do it another time.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, I can't do this, and I you know, that thing. Can't is such a restrictive word, and to not have that uttered in that sense.
Yeah.
If it's, of course, physical restriction is such a shame, but that's when I'm really happy that they looked after themselves and was like, okay, today's not my day and I need to say, you know, no. So yeah, we had 48
awesome people. It's just so amazing. And actually it went beyond rundown crew, didn't it, in terms of women that became interested. And how did they find out about it?
So we had Twitter and Instagram, and then we had a group on Facebook, and I think it was just like word of mouth really, and like people sharing it that way. But that was, it was really important for me for it to be broader, like, you know, it was amazing to have girls from the crew involved, but I also wanted it to be something that isn't, you know, like just involved in that, because everyone has a right to be involved in something like that.
And it was really like different types of women doing different careers, different ages. Like, it was really. And were there any kind of stories that really touched you specifically about the people that participated?
Yeah, I think for me, mothers are like a huge inspiration. Like, I think it's incredible for people to do these things, but to do it with children and lives and jobs, I think is insane. Like, I just find it blows my mind, because I think as someone, I don't have to pay a mortgage, I don't have to go and take my children to school in the morning, I don't have those responsibilities, and I find it difficult to train. So I think those women were amazing. There was a lady called Ace North, and she's 60 odd, and her and her daughter set out running together, but she'd actually had breast cancer previously, and I think, like, for someone like that to then go and run 100 kilometres at 60 odd years old, it just completely blows age perceptions out of the water. And it's like, you know, when people are like, oh no, I'm too old and this and that, and I think, I get it, but I also think that culturally that's why you've shaped that perception of yourself and your ability. Really, if you take inspiration from these people that are, you know, there's people in the world that are 80 odd years old, they run marathons every year, and I think, good on you, because you have not limited your own ability because of the norm.
Yeah.
So people like that, for me, were incredible. And then there's also
stories like that.
I know. I love a bit. It's not even cheese, it's real.
No, it's real. Jeremy, exactly.
And that's what's incredible. But there's also Laura. She was the one who said she'd only ever run a half marathon. And at first I was like, okay, I'm really... Because she's quite young, she's like early 20s. And I really wanted to make sure that she had a good experience. She never even ran a marathon. So for me to see her running that and bossing it was really special. Like, we basically ran Richmond Park Marathon as a training run. And like, I gave them like 2 weeks notice. I was like, I've got this idea, I've contacted the organisers. You don't have to run the marathon, but we were going to do a training run on that day anyway. So take it as slow or fast as you want. We'll be there. We can stop. We can have a rest. So Laura signed up with some of the other girls, and it turned into such a special event. We had like a lot of support, and it's a really nice race. It's like Aww. In Richmond Park. You've got deer and trees and greenery. It's so nice. And I remember Laura coming up across the finish line, even for that one. And I was so, like, I felt so emotional because, you know, had it not been for this group of women supporting her, perhaps she would never run a marathon yet.
Yeah.
And, like, now she's going to run an ultra in December. It's, like, 33 miles. And it's, like...
Amazing.
Just casual. She's, you know, become she's normal. Like, yeah, just going to go and run this, like, you know, trail run. And it to see that now, it's, like, amazing. And, I mean, I'm grateful that I found this in my age that I am now, and because it has helped shape what I feel like I can do or what I want to do in the future. But I'm really grateful that she's found this at an early yeah. age, because I think it is such a huge life skill and it's such a valuable one yeah. to have.
Yeah, and it's all about overcoming. I mean, even within one race, like, people say mm-hmm. running represents life, mm-hmm. and especially when you're in a long race or a marathon or longer, I think, you go through such highs and lows
yeah.
that, you know, you've got to keep your mind in check so that those lows don't go too low and yes. you're still kind of going for the end and not allowing that to take over. So I think the mental strength, and actually in terms of everything that you've done, yes, we've spoken a lot about training, and yes, that's really important. You can't neglect it, but I think it's in the head, the mental strength that allows you to get there.
Yeah.
But that's the difference, I think.
Yeah. I think it is a physical thing, of course, but I think it's like 50-50.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not mentally prepared, like, or it's, I don't know, it's also overcoming those mental barriers. Like I said, it's, you have to gain experience through doing something, so to get over that block of I can't, you have to just do,
yeah,
in that sense. And I think when it's a mental thing like that, you can apply it to anything, career,
yeah, exactly.
You know, or, you know, if you want to go and, like, I don't think I can be an astronaut. That's not a career choice. But now I think I can do whatever I want to do, because if I want to become a doctor, I can go back to school and I can do this. You know, it takes time, but I think you just have to, you find out how to manoeuvre yourself, and you just have to see it as a journey. I think that's the thing.
I think it's just so powerful. I mean, I don't know whether I've mentioned it before, but for Random Crew, there's a Youngers project.
Yeah.
And I think that mirrors what you've just said. So, you know, there's young kids, well, the late teens usually, I think, that come along from, you know, some pretty difficult circumstances and areas. And we get them to Charlie Dark, who Sorrel mentioned earlier, founder of Random Crew. The idea is to get them trained for a marathon. And it's phenomenal to see the changes in those guys. And, you know, they go on, and there is this belief. And so therefore that translates into career. And they realise that they've got opportunities and tend to go and grab them
yep.
then. And it's just such an amazing transformation that you see. And obviously this isn't just limited to running. It can be limited to anything in life that gives you that kind of belief. But I do think that sometimes it isn't your career that makes you realise that you can do those things, but the things you do in your spare time can help with other parts of your life. And actually, that's a good point, because you've had a huge amount of training going on, full-time job, Women Run 100 project, How do you find the balance? Because I think that's a tricky one.
How
many hours in a day are there?
I've got a very supportive boyfriend. That's one thing. But also, I think it's about... You've got to look after yourself, obviously, but I think it's also about... You can find more hours in the day. So whether that's running late at night or getting up early in the morning, you know, or running on your lunch break, or... For Berlin training, I ran to and from work a lot.
Okay.
Which was like 9 miles, but, you know, cutting out the tube and cutting out the cost, I think you just have to see things in a more fluid way and open up your perception of, you know, even just commuting or anything like that a bit more.
Mm.
Or run home from seeing your friends or, you know, little things like that. Like, you have to just... You just have to find a way, I think, and... Juggling.
Actual juggling.
Yeah. But I think I am a very stubborn person, so I think, like, I don't know. If I had 8 miles to do that day, I'd be like, I have to do 8 miles and then whatever comes after that.
Okay.
You know, so it wasn't really an option in my brain to be like, nah. Like, obviously there were days when I thought, I'm too tired, I'm not running, but I think you just have to fit it in.
Yeah, and you do have to listen to your body occasionally. I think, you know, there is the risk of overtraining, mm-hmm. so you've got to kind of think about that. But I suppose, just coming back to the Women Run 100, you did dramatically change the ratio of men to women in that particular race, didn't you? From 80-20 last year to...
It's like 39% women.
Yeah.
Well, although...
That's phenomenal.
I'm so happy with that change, but I don't feel it's... all down to me.
No, I know, but it was really instrumental, I think.
Okay, well, thank you.
Accept the compliment.
Sorry.
No. I'm not very good at it.
But no, yeah, the race organisers actually, after we, after I said I'm going to do Women Run 100 with, so myself and Kat, worked together, and Kat Simpson, who I mentioned before, she did like training programs, helped me like coach the ladies. After we did that, they were like, okay, we're going to do a campaign called Ultra 50-50.
Okay.
Which I thought, amazing. I've never heard of an ultra marathon doing this sort of thing, or taking that incentive. So it was supposed to, they really wanted to make it 50-50, but for me, a 20% change, I'll take that for the first year, you know. So, yeah, and now even the response I've had from women, like, oh, I'm going to do it this year, and, yeah, it's really, really positive. Because I think a lot of women now have seen, like, oh, right, that person can do it, like, I can do it. And also the difference in experiences. So one of the girls called Sanchia and a lady called Tilly, two lovely ladies, and, like, they basically did the 50K, and... Their experience of it was hilarious. Like, they did videos, and like, it was just, they were having picnics, and like, you know, and it, but some runners might think, oh, that's not race, that's not serious, and their head's not focused, and da da da. No, like, they still ran that distance, but you don't have to be so uptight about it all necessarily, you know. You can go, and it's, that's what I love about ultramarathons. It's like, it is so much more relaxed in that sense, and it's not like a road race. It's just a journey.
There's a lot of camaraderie, isn't there?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I've never had a bad experience, I don't think, in an ultramarathon of someone being rude or, you know, like this year, although I was racing it, the lady who came first, Sarah Morwood, she was... We had a great conversation. We've met before, but... We were just having a chat, and then after she found me online and sent me the sweetest message and was like, it was really a pleasure to share the trail with you. And I was like, you did not have to do that,
it's
so sweet. But I think that's the thing. It's like, you're all in that journey together, however fast you or slow you did it. Like, it doesn't matter.
There's like a mutual respect, because everyone's kind of going pretty far and beyond what is the norm, I guess. And it's really difficult, so you appreciate the fact that somebody else is putting themselves through it.
Yeah.
As you are. But I think what's probably important to remember in all of this, and we're talking huge distances here, is that I think everyone started from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, your first run when you got back into running probably wasn't particularly pleasant. I don't know. And so it's easy to think, oh wow, there's these people doing these incredible things. That's so far away. It's like looking up at Everest. Or eating the elephant, I think, coming up in the last podcast. but it's about having a realistic goal within a certain time frame and then working kind of away from that. And actually, I've just said realistic when earlier we were talking about it not being realistic, but ultimately it is about breaking it down
yeah.
and working out how you're going to get to where you want to get. So I think that's just amazing. I think the ratio change in for that race is really, really cool. So what races have you got coming up?
So I was going to do an ultra in December, but I kind of just want to run when I want. So okay. I'm not going to race until... my next race is Manchester Marathon and then London Marathon again.
Okay.
London Marathon's like a tradition now. It'll be my fourth year.
It's brilliant.
But with Manchester Marathon, that is actually the next women run project.
Okay.
So basically the ratio in... We did actually have a conversation before the podcast about the ratio of females and males in marathons, and I was actually really shocked. But I know generally of what it is, but it needs sorting out. It's like 7% females, and I feel like a trip to Spain needs to be on the cards. But back to the UK, Manchester Marathon percentage is 25% female. And to link with the crew there, basically want to focus on the north and the south and anyone else from anywhere that wants to come and do it.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be our next project. Because I think it's really important as well to not just focus on ultras. Like, it was amazing to see all the ladies in the summer take on such a huge goal. But I think a marathon's still a huge thing.
Oh, it is,
and
yeah.
I don't want people to forget that. So, you know, I think it's really important for me to focus on that and to try and get as many women as we can involved in that. That's the next goal.
That's really exciting. And have you kind of announced that yet?
So we're going to put campaign is a bit of a big word, but we're going to put that out within the next fortnight. So, okay. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I'll definitely be spreading the word. I think that's really... And then obviously Boston next year, presumably.
Yes, but not in 2016 because I missed the... Or didn't miss the cut-off. I didn't sign up before the cut-off. So you have to get... You have to qualify before, I think it's September, October, and okay. then enter. But because I was like, I don't want to jinx it. Like, I could have got in with the female time, but I also wanted to just see what happened. So it was after that time. So that's 2017.
Awesome.
But yeah.
That's a nice longish term goal to head for. I think that's been really, really exciting. And I am genuinely really excited about where this... I don't know what you're going to call it now, because you're getting rid of the 100, aren't
yeah.
you?
So it'll just be Women Run, but it's WNN Run.
Yeah.
And then we'll have our new website going out in a couple of weeks too.
Oh, that's really exciting. And if people want to follow you on social media, how do they find you?
It's just Sorrel Walsh, so it's just double R, double L, and then... WALSH, if you don't know how to spell that.
That's brilliant. Well, thanks so, so much for coming on. I think, obviously, the progress that you've made as a runner, I think, is incredible and hopefully a really amazing example for others. But also, I think, this community aspect and realising the benefits that it gave to you, I suppose, and that it can give to other women is just really exciting. So, yeah, we'll have to see how that goes, and good luck with the Manchester campaign.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode, learnt more about Sorrel, and obviously if you want to get involved with anything that she's up to, please do get in contact with her. I will include the different organisations she spoke about and the different races in the notes to this episode on the livebeyond.co website. In the meantime, if you've got any suggestions, any comments on the episode, please do leave them either in the comments section on the website or write me a little note in the contact form on the website. I'd love to hear from you. And as usual, the next episode will be posted in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.